It gives me great pleasure. Were you done? Okay. It gives me great pleasure to introduce my bestie, Kristen, from Santa Maria.
All right. Oh, my gosh. Kristen, alcoholic. Thank you, Kevin and Kim, for asking me to speak tonight. And it's been a while since I've spoke here, but I see a lot of people that have heard me speak probably a few times. So I'm sorry for that if you didn't know I was going to be here. But here I am. So, but let's see. All right. I just want to welcome everybody that's new. And, you know, I know the pain and I know the agony of walking in here and, you know, feeling just hopeless and helpless and unwilling. And I was all of those things. I was, I came here and I was angry, but I was angry at myself, what I had become. And so, you know, you're right where you should be, because there's joy that comes with after the anger and the, you know, hopelessness and the unwillingness. And, you know, once you're willing, you know, everything changes and nobody can do it for you. You can only do it for yourself. No one can stop you from drinking. And, you know, I thought that, you know, I'd walk in here and I would just, you know, something immediately would click for me and I would just be cured and I could walk back out, turn my court card in and, you know, and be just done with this. But that's not my story. And I don't know, it's so different now because I just celebrated 4 years of sobriety and thank you. I love my date. It's 11-11. I wish it was 11-11-11, but I didn't even walk in here until December 8th of 2011. And so I found my way here, you know, through the court system, and I'll get to all that. But I am, I grew up in Santa Barbara, and my father is an alcoholic, and he died of this disease at the age of 52, and along with lung cancer. And both of my grandfathers on my on both sides of my dad's dad and my mom's dad both died of alcoholism. My sister is an alcoholic. My brother is an alcoholic. And, you know, it just runs deep in our family and all of my uncles and aunts. And, you know, for me, I saw that growing up and it just, I never understood it. It was just, you know, like, why do you do that? It's so, like, I just never understood it. And so I battled eating disorders. I was anorexic, bulimic, and then at one point I weighed 260 pounds. And that was after I had had kids. And I'll get into all that a little later. But so I spent a lot of my summers and Christmases in Hawaii. My grandfather owned a hotel. And it was always like happy times. We would see, you know, my family. I had Samoans in my family and Hawaiians. And they loved to drink and play Hawaiian music. And, you know, it's just, it never looked, we never saw any like violence from it. And, you know, just an occasional time, but I never understood. I guess when I grew up, it was just normal to see everybody drinking. My father would come home every single night with a brown paper bag and he'd have a 6-pack of Coors Light and his cool cigarettes and his beer nuts. And it was just every single night. And my dad was a really functioning alcoholic. He was a space engineer and he worked for Santa Barbara Research Center. And then my mom worked for the government. And so I had a pretty like decent life growing up. We weren't rich. We weren't poor. I just remember never wanting for anything. I just got everything that I always wanted. I grew up in Goleta and then, but Santa Barbara, same thing. But I would go out with my friends, you know, when I was like 15, and we'd go to in front of a liquor store, and it's when they didn't have like the cops out, you know, like bait trying to get people busted for, you know, selling to underage drinkers and stuff. And we'd get a bottle of like a Yukon Jack, and we'd all pass it around and share it, and, you know, and I thought, oh, get all drunk, and then, you know, you think you're drunk, but you're so young, you don't really realize it. So, but I would drink like that, and then I'd get a headache, and I'd be like, oh, I just don't want this anymore. And then when I was 15, I had to go into a 13-month treatment program for bulimia, and that is where I regressed, and I was anorexic, and I weighed about 103 pounds, and you know, I'm 5'8" and a half, and you know, it was deadly, and they told my parents that, you know, I was gonna die if I didn't start eating, and so I had to have like this catheter in my chest, and you know, and literally force fed through intravenously, and when you're 15, and you know, and you look at yourself in the mirror and you just see ugly, you know, and it's a lot of, you know, so many people struggle with eating disorders. And the reason I talk about my eating disorders, because it has so much to do with my alcoholism. And so I was in this treatment program for like 13 months, and so I had to be homeschooled, and I never went back to high school from then. So from 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I was tutored, and I shouldn't even graduated high school. I didn't have enough credits, and my tutor said, you know what, I'm not going to ruin your life and not let you graduate. But I had taken all these semesters of typing, and so I could type over 100 words a minute. And so right out of high school, after, you know, taking the test, and I didn't get to go graduate with my class or anything. I just got my certificate, and I got a job at UCSB just right out of high school. I was making like $62,000 a year. And, you know, when you're 18 years old, and, you know, that is unheard of these days. I mean, I have not worked in 23 years, and I am practically unemployable right now, you know, because I have no experience, and they like see this huge gap and they're like, where have you been? Well, I've been a stay-at-home mom for that long. So, you know, if you're a stay-at-home mom or you've got kids, you know, it's not an easy task. And so, so I get this really good job and I have this great apartment in La Conchita, and it's, I'm paying like $300 a month, and you can crawl under the freeway, to get to the beach every day. And so I mean, that was just what I loved to do, lay in the sun and just hang out with my friends, and my sister surfed, and everybody, you know, would always gather at my house, and everybody would drink, and I was just like, you know, not attracted to drinking at all. And I remember, you know, I'd get drunk occasionally and just be so hungover, and I'm just like, oh, I don't want to hang out with you guys anymore, you know. And so I have like, I had an uncle that was one of the, well, he was like the biggest drug dealer in Santa Barbara for ecstasy and cocaine. And he, and so if you bought, you know, that stuff in the 80s in Santa Barbara, chances are you got it from my uncle. And so my sister started being a runner for him, and she kept me really guarded, and she just told all of her friends all the time, because she's 3 years older than me, and she's like, if you guys ever offer my sister anything, you know, I'm going to kill you. And like, and she had people that could literally get you killed, and she would get on airplanes, and that's when you could get away with getting drugs on airplanes. She would drive. She would go to different countries. I mean, it was just crazy, and she got paid a lot of money to do that. And so I at this time I'm about 20 years old, and my eating disorder stays intact. You know, I'm like throwing up like 13 times a day. I am, you know, a big fat pig at 110 pounds, you know, and I just want to just be skinny, and that's all I want. And you know, it's a difficult thing to cope with when you're, especially women, you know. I know, for me, it took me up until like a year ago, I could not even look in the mirror, you know, after, you know, being an alcoholic, admitting I'm an alcoholic, and looking in the mirror was just, you know, too much to take. And about a year ago, I could make eye contact with myself in the mirror, but that's about it. I just, as long as my shoes match, you know, I'm good. So, but anyway, so, okay, backtrack a little. So I have this really great job at UCSB, and then I meet my ex-husband, who I have 3 children with, and I, you know, that is the best thing that has ever come out of my marriage, my life, is my 3 children. My son is, he's almost 24, and he's a United States Army soldier. And then I have a 20-year-old who's, like, really confused about what she wants to do in life. And then I have my 17-year-old. But at the time, my ex-husband's a California Highway Patrol. And I lived in La Conchita along the freeway, and I need to go run into Carpinteria to go to the grocery store, and I see this cop out there. I have no driver's license and expired tags. And so I'm like, I want to see where this cop is at, and I see him, he's writing a ticket, and so so he's gone off the freeway, and then I pull up, and there's this little store there, this market, and they had a grill there, and you could, order food. And so I see the Mustang sitting there, and I'm like, oh, crap. And so I'm like, go in the store to see if he, if he ordered food, because a lot of the highway patrols, they ate there. And so I go in there, and he's standing at the counter, and he's like, oh, hi there. And I'm like, hi. And then I find out, you know, he ordered food. So I quit getting my car, and I'm already 20 something, and I don't have a driver's license. I have expired tags, you know, and, because when I went to take my driving test, I didn't pass. And I said, you know what? That's okay. I don't need it then, you know? And so I drove, you know, forever without a driver's license. And I lived like that. I made good money, but I just didn't have my registration. The car was in my sister's name. And so, but anyway, so then long story short, I go into the market a couple days later, and the guy, the owner, says, hey, you know that cop that was in here? And I'm all, yeah. And he's all, oh, he wants your phone number. And I'm all, oh, okay, like that, you know. And so then here I am, you know, 24 years later, or 26 years later. And, you know, and so we have, quickly, it all happens super quickly. He moves in. We go to buy a car together, and I'm like, oh, crap. I'm all, I got to tell you something. I can't put my name on that paperwork. And he's like, why? And I'm like, because I don't have a driver's license. And he's like, okay, you know. And so then, I'm forced to get legal, and I pass my test, like, the very first day that I take my driving test. And so, you know, so then we end up, we move to Santa Barbara, and we buy a house, and it's like when houses were affordable in Santa Barbara. I think we paid like $450,000 for our house, and now the property is worth about $2.7 million. It's right down the hill from City College, and so we buy a house, and then I get pregnant, and then we get married after that. You know, I was pregnant when I got married, and then I have my son, and then my husband, he would drink occasionally. We'd go out a few times, and we'd get just shit faced, and then I'd be hungover, and you know, it's just, I hated drinking. I didn't like the feeling the next day. And so then, I have my son, and then 6 months after I have my son, I was having to call in sick all the time because my husband would have to go to training and do all these things to kind of move his way up the ladder with the California Highway Patrol. And which he did. He has a really decorated career. He's been on the force for 30 years, and he most likely will retire and go work for the Secret Service in Washington, D.C. And just like he was able to do all that because I feel now I sacrifice. I don't like to say that about my kids, but I have literally been with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even in my darkest days, you know, why I was drinking. And so anyway, so then I quit my job. And then I'm a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, for most of us, when you stay at home like that, what do? You eat and you eat and you eat. And pretty soon, you know, I have my other daughter like 2 years, 9 months later. And then we decide to sell that house. And then we get a crappy little shack up on the hill and on the Mesa in Santa Barbara. And, you know, that house, I think we paid about $550,000 for. And then the worst part about it is that because I didn't want to be married anymore, when we sold that house, we sold it for about $1.5 million and walked away with $0. And so it's like we put our everything into that house. Like he would buy a motorcycle, a Corvette, a diamond ring, and, you know, we put it all into the house, and we just came up with nothing. And when I wanted to get divorced, I never thought about how my life would change, that part of it. But anyway, so then we buy that house, and, you know, I have a pretty decent life. It's a crappy house, you know, it needs a lot of work, and we did a few things to it. And then I have my other daughter. And then I remember one day I just looked in the mirror and I was like, I lost myself. I had no idea who I was. I couldn't believe when I look at pictures of myself what I look like. And so I go to the seminar at Cottage Hospital, and it's for gastric bypass surgery. And I was never overweight until I had kids, and I was always like could maintain like a size 8. And now, you know, Oprah magazine says plus size is size 8, and I see that and I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's kind of frightening these days. But so I go to the seminar, and they tell me I don't qualify for the surgery. And because I didn't weigh enough, and I'm like, oh my God, I'll eat, I'll do whatever. Well, my friend is the nurse at this doctor's office, and she says, well, I'm going to go in the other room and do whatever you have to weigh more. And so I got on the scale and I weighed more. And so anybody that's had gastric bypass surgery, or if you're planning on having it, this much alcohol gets you just feeling fantastic. I mean, it is like a medicine cup full, and it is the weirdest feeling. It's like, you know, something comes over you and you just are like in euphoria, kind of. I mean, it's such a great feeling, but you have to drink like a fish, and you have to, you know, you just got to keep them coming. And everybody would say, how could you drink 60 beers a day? Well, that's how I could drink 60 beers a day, because you metabolize it so fast. It goes from your mouth into your liver, and it bypasses everything. And so so for me, I had I lost 118 pounds in 8 months. And I was able to be a runner again. I used to be an avid runner. I could run 16 miles a day. I don't do that now because I have heart problems. But a year after my gastric bypass surgery, I had a stroke. And it was just something I was born with. And I have to deal with that today. And, you know, open heart surgery is most likely going to be something in my future. And I've had heart surgery, but it was, they went through my groin vein, and up, I have this device in my heart that's kind of doing the job right now, but it's not a sure thing. But anyway, so in between all this, I decided I don't want to be married anymore. So so my husband's kind of like taken, you know, by surprise. I don't want to be married, but I don't think about the house, the kids, the cars, the money. I don't think about any of that. I just don't want to be married anymore. And so I got to live in that house for about 2 years. And then then all of it starts to sink in. You can't have this house. I'm not paying for this. I'm not doing that. And but luckily in the state of California, you know, our rights are, for stay-at-home moms, our rights are pretty protected. So I lived in that house for a little while, but I don't say that to be like spiteful. I just say that because, you know, I believe I earned it, you know, and I do earn it every single day, you know. And so, but anyways, so I can't afford to stay in Santa Barbara, so I move here. And at this point, I hadn't started drinking yet. I hadn't tested the waters with the gastric bypass surgery. Well, I move here, and I'm so depressed. I forget, you know, I didn't even think about what it would be like to lose, you know, where do I go get coffee? I mean, where do I grocery shop? Where do I do anything? And I would drive out onto Broadway and I was like, oh my God, I went from an ocean view to this. And I was devastated. And I was just like, I mean, it was the most devastating thing that's happened to me. And that was in... I moved here in June of 2000. Yeah, of June. I know, get the violin out, right? I moved here in June of 2010, and I would go and meet my friends and my sister in San Ynez, and we had a friend that owned a restaurant. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, this feels good, you know, drinking a glass of wine. And then pretty soon, I'm like taking the booze home with me. You know, I'd sober up at the restaurant, and then I remember the very first time I went to Food Max, and I just bought, I bought six bottles of wine, and I said, oh, this will last me a couple weeks, and I am not kidding you, I drank that wine in about 4 hours, and I remember just, I can live here now, I can live in Santa Maria, you know? I'm not kidding. That's what happened. And my kids absolutely hated me for moving them from Santa Barbara to here. My son was a junior in high school. And at this point, my ex-husband had to move to San Francisco so he could work overtime, because the highest paid highway patrols live up there. They make $200,000+ a year. And he was working to support. He had to pay $2,700 a month and rent there, and then here, you know, my life cost about over $5,000 a month, and so I just, I turned into a complete maniac, and that's all, but I was an isolator. I like to drink alone in my bathroom, under the bed. I mean, and my bed is pretty high. You can get under there and lay under. I mean, I would wake up and I'd be under the bed, and or in the toilet or in the bathtub. I mean, the craziest, in my walk-in closet, you know, and I would, you know, just wake up in the weirdest places, but I wasn't waking up. I was coming to, because I was a blackout drinker. And, one thing, you know, I had heart surgery in between all this. And my doctor says, do you drink a lot? And I'm like, no. And, you know, and here I am, like, drinking. At that point, I was probably drinking five bottles of wine, you know, by noon. And then, you know, about 20, 30 beers by five. And then, you know, and then I started drinking. I loved vodka and sugar-free Red Bull. Oh, my God. That was just like my drink of choice, but it made me crazy. It literally made me psychotic. And, you know, you're nice until you're not, you know, and then you just never know when that's going to be, though. And I remember, so I had heart surgery in October, and then I'm going to skip all the way to August now. So August of 2011, I'm going to go to Santa Barbara to this party, and it was Michael Jordan has this flight camp every year in Santa Barbara at UCSB, and all these people come from all these different countries, and I was dating this guy from Spain, and he was here for that. So we go to this party, and I left here about 5 in the afternoon after drinking almost all day, but I sobered up enough just to make the drive to get to Santa Barbara. So I get there about 6 o'clock, and, you know, I think I'm drinking wine only, and I later found out that wasn't what I only was drinking. I was drinking vodka and Red Bull. I had about 4 bottles of wine all by myself, and this is from about 6 o'clock till about 9:30 at night. And him and I get in this fight because he's jealous, because I don't want to go dangle my feet in the hot tub. I mean, I'm dressed, like, all in a dress and, you know, dressed up, and I'm talking to all these other people that, you know, you see once a year from the flight camp, and it's like it was exciting to be there. It's a great, you know, it's just a party. And so, but I'm thinking I'm going to spend the night. Well, we get in this huge fight. I managed to go get my car keys, all my luggage and my bags, and I walked down about 82 steps, and I'm wearing heels about this high, and I managed to get in my car, and I remember going to Jack in the Box on State Street and and Hope Avenue, and I remember getting a Diet Coke, and then I don't remember anything else. And so I'm driving. I made it from there all the way to Refugio, which is about, I think it's about 15 miles. And I get to the top of the Refugio Hill, and the witnesses said I was going about 80 miles per hour. I go into the center divider, and there's shrubs about this high. There's literally grass, if it's this high, keeping you from the other side of the freeway. And they said I just drove a straight line for about a mile, and all of a sudden my car just flips. I flipped about 8 to 10 times, and my car was completely totaled. I had an Expedition, and it was had the cage in it and everything, but all the windows are bashed out, and the car is just like a pancake. And I came to rest upside down on the northbound side of the freeway, the side I was driving on. And the car was upside down. And the only thing I remember when I woke up was the park ranger. He was the first one on the scene. And then the fire truck came, and my sister's very best friend was the fire captain on that fire truck, and she passed out when she saw me, and they had to give her that Epsom salt to get her to come to, and she's trying to talk to me, and then the highway patrol come, and I'm like, oh great, this is gonna suck for me. And at this point, my husband had moved back to Santa Barbara. He had been back in Santa Barbara for about 6 months, and so the officer that shows up, he doesn't know who I am because he's new. And then his sergeant shows up, and they're like, oh crap, and I'm in and out of consciousness because I am in shock, complete shock over what has happened. And I'm, you know, they said that they stabilized my neck and they undid me, and I crawled outside the window. And at that point, I was still a runner. I was running like 8 miles a day, and so I was in really good shape, and I managed to crawl out by myself, and then I collapsed in all this glass. And but then his sergeant comes and he's like, oh crap, it's Dana Smith's wife. And so they're like, I'm telling them I had four people in the car with me. So they closed the 101 freeway for about 3.5 hours. I didn't have anybody in the car with me, but I did. Earlier I did, but that's what I'm thinking, that I had people in the car with me. And so, you know, the news is there and everybody. So they... So they get me to Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital, and the news cameras are there, and John Palminteri, he's a reporter in Santa Barbara, and he knows my husband, and he shows up, and he's in his plain clothes, and luckily he had had my kids that weekend, and they weren't with me, and so he says to him, what are you doing here? You know, and he's like, please just go away. Like, please. And my name never made it in the news, never made it in the newspaper, nothing. But I remember seeing the news, and they were like, oh yeah, it looks like, you know, alcohol was the cause of this. And before, you know, anybody even says anything. And I was a 0.22, I think, something like that. And so, but what happened to me was everyone's always, oh, the girl with the ponytail, like, it's funny that I wear my hair up all the time, but I lost all of my hair on this side, and it's like barely growing back, you know, so I'm always like wearing my hair up because of that. I had about 50 stitches here. I lost, these two fingers were severed off, and I had four hand surgeries, and you know, I keep my hand tucked all the time because it's just a constant reminder, and I don't even really feel them that much, but, and then I had a big chunk out of my arm here, but I didn't lose, I mean, like my eyebrow I didn't lose one hair here, you know, and my ear is here and my nose is here and, you know, in my car, and my head just took all of it. And they said what happened was I probably subconsciously, you cover your face. And so that's what made these fingers get severed. But all I care about at the hospital is, where's my dress I was wearing? Because it was a new dress. And I'm like, That's how sick I am, you know, with my alcoholism, and I don't even know it. And I'm screaming, and I'm fighting the doctors, and I'm kicking the nurse, and I just remember my ex-husband standing over me, just, you know, he's crying, and he's just like, just yelling at me to shut up and let him get to me. And then I had had heart surgery, you know, in 2010, and so they had to rush me in for that, and just, you know, the tragedy of that is that I didn't stop drinking, you know, and I stayed in the hospital for a couple days. And I remember waking up that morning and I have my head all wrapped and it's just bloody and just dried blood everywhere. And they sit you up and there's that mirror, you know, right in front of the bed. And I sat up and I just was crying like, God, why did I live through this? You know, I just could not believe that I lived through that, and I just wanted to die. And then in walked my three kids, you know, and my son just looking at me disgusted, because I was the most vile, disgusting person. I get violent. I just say the worst things ever to people when I'm drunk. And I remember my oldest daughter just, you know, just hugging me and crying. And then my youngest daughter, you know, and my youngest daughter, I believe she was like, she was 7, 8, 9, and then 12, and then 15, and I remember just looking at them and being so ashamed, but it didn't stop me. You know, my mom said, if you ever drink again, I will just be so livid. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, so I'm trying. I have these hand surgeries that are so painful. Literally, my hand was about 5 times the size of this. You know, it was about this huge, my hand. For about a year straight, I had to keep it bandaged. And you know, my doctor still, after 4 surgeries, he's like, I don't think I saved your fingers, and we're probably going to have to amputate all the way down. And I was like, what? You know, I'm like thinking about that part of, and that's just me being vain and being, you know, just, you know, horrified of something like that happening to me when I'm not even thinking, God blessed me, you know, and I'm alive. But I know now that that crash, that God was right there with me, and I didn't, you know, I had no use for God then, other than why didn't you kill me? And so I continued to drink for I just start, you know, right where I left off, and yeah, I'm taking the pain pills, and oh my God, this feels even better now, you know, it's like all that mixed together, my case took a while to get to the courts because no judge in Santa Barbara would take my case because of they knew my ex-husband. So then they transferred it up here to Judge Flores, and it took 4 months for me to even go to court. And, you know, I'm driving on a suspended license. I'm driving drunk every day. I go to court. I had about a bottle of wine before I went to court. And, you know, and I remember everything he explained about a DUI, if you did this, if you did that, you stay in your seat. All these other people are going to go before you. And I was like, oh, crap. You know, I caused the crash. But luckily, I didn't cause any injury to anybody else. But they counted me as causing, you know, harm to myself. And so so I remember I started crying in court, and he's screaming at me, and he's like, you know better. And I'm like, why do I know better? My husband's a cop. I'm not a cop. You know, I don't give a shit. Like, you know, and so, but he really, you know, and that's the thing. I'm so sick that I'm like getting offended by this judge screaming at me who's seen it all, you know, and so I just, of course, I plead guilty because there's no fighting it, you know, and people get lawyers, and I get that, but it might give you peace of mind. But if you've had a DUI, it's pretty, you know, the state of California is like this, this, and this. You have 1, you get this, you get 2, you get this, 3, you're going to prison, 4, you're going to do a lot of time. I mean, just if you killed somebody, if you hurt somebody, you know, there's just pretty much, it's black and white now these days. There's no gray. You just do what, you know, if you drink and drive and you do that. So I got a house arrest. I got ordered here to 30 meetings in 60 days. That's so funny to me to think of that now, because really, I mean, I sometimes do 24 meetings in a week, you know, and so I come here and I'm drinking in between meetings, out in my car at meetings. I never would leave a meeting, but I would chug some beer when I was in the car, and then I'd come in here, and I was in here for 27 months, and I was drinking every single day, and I thought I was so lucky. I would hear all you guys losers talk about can't drink, and I'm like, just drink. I'm so lucky I get to leave here and go drink. I'm not an alcoholic. And anybody that remembers me, you know, I sat over here where Billy is, and I held my purse, and I, you know, I kept my coffee cup in my purse. And a lot of people weren't, you know, they thought I was like stuck up or snooty or something. No, I was dying inside. I was literally so envious. I was dying of envy of all of you, the men, the women. I just wanted so bad what you guys had, and I had no attainable thought. No thought came into my mind that it was attainable for me, ever. And I just thought, I'm going to be lucky if I drink tonight and I get to go home and I die. That is luck to me. And so I don't know what happened. On September 9th, I call Ann Westbrook, or Ann W, sorry, she doesn't care. But anyways, I call her and I tell her, I know, right? I call her and I'm like hoping she doesn't answer so I can just, because I was scared of her. I would hear her share and I'm like, oh my God, I don't want what she has. She's going to want me to do something. But I call her and she tells me, yes, meet me at Olive Garden. That woman spent 2 hours with me, didn't know me, and never heard me share. She didn't even remember me when she saw me walk in. And I'm like, you don't? Like, I really? No, because I remember you. So she's my sponsor. We start walking like 7 miles a day together. And then I come to a happy hour meeting, and there was a girl who shared, a lot of you know Kaylin, and she shared that she had relapsed, and she like made it look just beautiful. She like said, I ordered 4 margaritas and 2 shots for each one, and I lined them all up, and I'm like, God, that sounds good, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, so I'm thinking, maybe I should drink again, maybe I can drink again, and this is 39 days sober. Well, I get home and my garage door will not close. And I have these 3 kids at home and I need that door to shut because I'm scared, you know, to not have the garage door shut. So I tell my daughter, I'll be right back. And it's on for me. I go home, I get a 30 pack, I go back for more, and I am completely drunk and I handle it. And pretty soon I'm yanking the garage door down, you know, and it's all teetering like this the next day. And however I could get it down, you know, and I'm happy, you know. But the thing I was most mad about that day was like I wasted all day till 8 o'clock at night and I finally drank. I didn't drink all day. It's a wasted day, you know. And so then I had called Anne. But I star 67'd her, and if you don't know what that does, it blocks your phone number, so they don't know who's calling. So I star 67'd her, and I've got the beer in my hand, and click, you know, I hang up, and I just chug it. And so then I call her and tell her what I did, and she goes, get your ass to my house. So we walk, but I continue for 3.5 more weeks. I am drinking, and then I go to the convention, and a lot of you were there, and I took the newest newcomer book at the convention in front of about 400 to 500 people, and I was so angry, because there was a girl with 2 days of sobriety, and I had about a half hour, because I'm at all the marathon meetings, and I'm like going to my car in between, you know, I'm having fun, and I'm all drunk, and all you guys are running around talking about, you know, you're at the, yay, we're at a convention, you know, and I'm drinking, and I was so angry at myself. So I go home that night, and I drink so much. The next day, I'm out at Target in San Luis, and I see, I'm loading up my cart with a couple 30 packs and I see Olive Garden. I'm going to do it up real good. I go in there and have some Blue Moons and some pasta. And I'm so drunk. I drive home, drink all night. And then Ann says to me the next morning, get to my house right now. And I used to hide alcohol from myself and I would put it in the vegetable drawer. And I always would, you know, for some reason, it just worked for me. Blacked out, I would be, you know, looking through the refrigerator and there's nothing. But I would always wake up and there would be beer and there was nothing in there. And so I went with her and then 11-11 is my date. And I will say that, you know, since then, you know, I got right into service at 54 Days of Sobriety. At 64 Days of Sobriety, I'm trying to figure out how to commit suicide and not make a mess. Because I don't know how to not drink, and I don't know how to drink. I don't know how to live. I don't know how to vacuum my house sober. I don't know how to clean. I don't know how to be a mother. I don't know how to do anything sober or drinking. And so I just wanted to die, and I didn't want to make a mess because I didn't want my kids to find it bloody. I didn't know how the right combination of anything to take. And so I get the service commitment. I go to it. That's where I met Vicky then. And we've been, you know, best friends ever since that day. And I, you know, quickly, I had 5 months and 3 weeks, and I want to be a secretary, and you know how I have to vote to see if it's okay, you know, if they, you know, take a group conscience. And there was like four people in there, and they're like, "Well, wait, how much time do you have?" And all this stuff, fighting it, and I took it so personal, and I'm like, I'm here every day, I'm at 4 to 5 meetings a day, I'm like, and you're not going to let me be a secretary? And I was, and this one girl, she had like a week longer than me, and I'm just, and she's trying to argue it, and she didn't even want it, and I'm like, okay. And that's where I finally got my first dose of what it's going to be like to be a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And it is, the women are hardcore, like hard to get close to, hard to break through, hard to get a hello from. And it has just been my experience. I keep my circle really small. I can't even make a circle. And, you know, and I do that because I just, it's more important for me to be of service than for you to like me. And eventually, you know, people either don't like you or they like you. And if I care about that, I will drink again. If I care what you think about what I look like or what I drive or what I have, I will drink again. And I just don't, I care what comes out of my mouth. And, you know, today I sponsor girls. I have a sponsor. I'm so glad I can say that, honestly. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. She sponsors a lot of girls. I talked to her before I got here tonight, and I wasn't going to lie and say, I told her, I'm all, God, I'm so glad you answered, because I didn't want to lie and say I talked to you and I didn't. And so, you know, it's important because, you know, people will do that, you know, just to look good. And you know, and in my very short 4 years of sobriety, you know, I'll say I have had almost 6 commitments at all times, except in this past year. I wasn't taking commitments in Santa Maria because of some of the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was staying away because of that, and I was only harming myself. And for me, I prefer to go meetings where there's men and women. I have no problem with men, you know, at all. I don't have a problem with women today. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. And, you know, and I'll share this. I acted horribly standing right here about 2 weeks ago at happy hour. There's some of you that got to see me, including one of my sponsees. And I told her like a couple days later, I'm all, if you want to fire me, it's okay. Like, but I went off and I got pushed and prodded, and there's no excuse for it. So if you saw me do that, I have no excuse. I did what I did. I said what I said. And I can't ever take it back for the people that saw me do it. And, you know, but that's the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not perfect. I don't want to be perfect. I never will be perfect. And as long as I, you know, I showed up that very next morning in a meeting and people are staring at me like, you know, and Jeff happened to leave that meeting early because he was going to a sponsor's house to a meeting. And when he left, I was like, relieved because I wouldn't have probably done that, but I've learned so much from doing that. And now I've had to step away from the women's meetings. I'm only going to go to book studies with the women, but I'm not trying to deter any women from going. For me, it's just I got to stay healthy. I have to keep myself safe and sane, and and I'm all about being of service, and that's what has done it for me, is being of service. I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable. I take nothing personal in this room anymore, and I think I'm fairly approachable. I just want to be a better person, and I want to be a good example to people that come in or people that come in and out. And thank you for the newcomer. You show me that it still sucks out there and that it's not any better than when I was doing it. And, I'm a dangerous, dangerous person when I drink. But I just want to read this one thing. Well, two things. And I said I wouldn't go past 8, but 8:15, right, Vicki? So I love this one part on Bill's story on page 5. It's liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. And for me, that's what it was, just to live, just to wake up in the morning and breathe. I was drinking warm beer. I was drinking warm vodka. I mean, I was drinking anything that was on my nightstand, and it was just the most it's baffling. It's cunning. It's everything. It is so demoralizing to wake up and look at your dresser and there's a bottle of vodka, there's like 40 beer bottles, and then my children, mommy, I gotta get to school, and so, but I'm just gonna read this last page, and this, every time I speak, I read this, because to date, no matter what, this is my life today, no matter whether I had a good day, a bad day, just a day. Some days I just have a day and I don't have anything good or bad to say about it. But it's on page 511 and it's Gutter Bravado. And it's, so today I'm much more comfortable with life as Alcoholics Anonymous has promised. And I know they're right when they say it keeps getting better. My circumstances have steadily improved as my spiritual life grows and matures. Words cannot begin to describe the feelings in my heart as I sometimes ponder how much my life has changed, how far I've come, and how much there is yet to discover. And though I'm not sure where my journey may take me next, I know I'll owe it to the grace of God and to 3 words of the 12 steps: continue, improve, and practice. Oh, and one more thing they told me, humility is the key. And for me, that is like my life to date with Alcoholics Anonymous, and along with willingness and just being comfortable with being really uncomfortable. And, I'm trudging forward into my 50th year of life, my 5th year of sobriety, and I have, it's a scary road ahead of me. I'm going to have empty nest syndrome, in September. And it'll be, a whole new experience for me in life. But I know nothing. I have a plenty of excuses. I have not one reason to drink. And I hope that, that you too, if you're new, just keep coming back. Something will click for you. It will. I thought I was the most hopeless piece of shit that ever walked in this room. And I'm not kidding. I was a violent, horrific person. And today, I'm not. Sometimes with my kids, today Jeff had to see me misbehave with my daughters, but they misbehaved to make me misbehave. But that's it. So, but yeah, I just want to be a better person. And, but yeah, thank you so much.
Let's give Kristen another round of applause. Thank you, Kristen, for speaking tonight. She will be available after the meeting to thank for speaking tonight. Also, a thank you to anyone that has a commitment at this meeting. Please stay for cupcakes if there's any left. And I would like to ask Sandy to close us out with the serenity prayer. All right.
Oh, I got my son's hand.
Dope.
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can.